Gossipnista here, your one and only source into the real lives of New Yorkers and what it's like to live in New York City. So is it all glitz and glamour? Where do you start? What should you know? And who am I? I'll tell you everything you need to know, and you'll thank me for it. XOXO, Gossipnista. Hello, and welcome to the Gossipnista podcast. I'm your host, Mariana Monks. Thank you so much for joining me today. Today, we are talking art and the city. And as many of you might know, New York City is home to many amazing artists. If you already are or have always dreamed of becoming a painter, sculptor, photographer, or any kind of artist, this is the episode for you. My guest today, Alex Mito, along with his business partner, James Milley, are helping to make artists and their art more accessible through their business, Superfine Art Fair, the number one art fair for artists in the U.S. And in our interview, Alex and I discuss the changing landscape of the city for artists, the good, the bad, the many things you need to know. Alex will also share his amazing entrepreneur journey that started at age 15. He owned his own brick and mortar at age 15, everyone. Wow. He'll dive into the many places he calls home, one of them being the secluded island of Shelter Island in New York. And of course, Alex is going to dive into his city tips and the wisdom he has from living here. It'll actually leave you wanting to hear a lot more from Alex. So without further ado, let's just dive into my conversation with the fabulous Alex Mito. Hey, Alex, welcome to the Gossipnista podcast. It has been a minute since I've wanted to have you here on the show. So welcome. How are you doing today?
I am good. Thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to be on the show.
Absolutely. I am happy to have you. I've been wanting to have a conversation with you for a while. So just to kind of get it going, where I like to start off, Alex, is kind of knowing about your New York story. So we're going to start there. And the first question I like to ask is, are you originally from New York City, Alex? Are you a native? Did you move to it? What's the story behind that?
Oh, I'm like everyone from a random small town somewhere in America. I moved to New York when I was 23. I did spend a lot of time in the city growing up. So I kind of have this interesting history of knowing New York. My first time in the city was 1993. So I knew the city really well through the 90s when I was like a literal child.
Okay.
And then I did not come to the city at all between 2001 and 2010. So my experience kind of was like the 90s, totally skipped the 2000s.
Yeah.
And then the what do you call those? The teens, I guess. And now we're in the 20s. Mm-hmm. So that's my New York experience.
All right. So you've had a little back and forth with New York. What specific area were you coming from? Did you note that?
No, I did not. I am from, well, I always lie and say I'm from Miami, which makes life a lot easier. I'm actually from the west coast of Florida, near Tampa, but not actually in Tampa, about 45 minutes away. But I grew up in Miami because I went to college there, spent a total of 7 years in Miami. And a lot of my formative experience was down there. So it's a lot easier for people to think that I'm from Miami. I just roll with that most of the time.
I like Miami. I like that. Yeah, that going with that. So that's amazing. Okay. So you've come and gone from New York City.
Yes.
Are you presently in New York City? Like, you know, and tell us, where have you lived in the city and where are you now?
That's a good question. And the answer is longer than you would think it is. I'm currently at my house in Shelter Island. It's about 3 hours east of the city, if anyone knows it. We call it the Unhampton. So we're right in between the Hamptons and the North Fork. It's a little island that you can only get to by boat. It's very quaint, very beautiful. I have turkeys in my yard. Yeah. Oh, not Shutter Island, Shelter. Shutter Island doesn't exist in real life. So it's... A lot of people ask when I say Shelter Island, they go, oh, is that movie Leonardo DiCaprio? No, no.
Was it based off of that island though?
No, it's totally unrelated. The words just sound similar.
Okay.
But you're not the first person to ask. It's a very common mistake. Shelter Island's a little town about 2,000 people, mm-hmm. a little island in the middle of Peconic Bay. I have owned a house here with my business partner, James, for almost 2 years now. So I love getting out here, especially in what we call the shoulder season. So spring, fall, it's really lovely. Yeah, I also, so I'm a three-way time splitter. I also have an apartment in Brooklyn, like on the border of Brooklyn Heights and Burnham Hill. I am there kind of in and out. It's like a pied-à-terre for me. So I'm in and out at this point. I'm not a full-time 365-day a year New Yorker at the moment, but I'm there often enough that my local baristas and barbers wonder where I go. And then I also have a home in Mexico City. So I'm down there quite a bit, often in the winter time. So probably be there January, February, a little bit of March, and intermittently throughout the rest of the year. So I'm between three places, and then I have a business in seven cities, so I'm there, and then I like to travel too, so I'm just all over the
I
place.
love it. I mean, I wouldn't, you said you like to travel. Obviously, you own three homes in three different areas.
Yep.
I love that two of them are based in, New York, one of them in New
Okay.
York City, you said near Brooklyn Heights. So have those been the only kind of homes you've had specifically, I mean, specific to the city?
No, not at all. When I moved to New York when I was 23, I moved to Alphabet City. So I lived on 7th Street between A and B Square in the middle of the block. So if anyone knows, Niagara on one side, Vazak's Bar, the Horseshoe Bar from The Godfather on the other side, I was dead center, facing the south entrance of Tompkins Square Park. Loved it. Great place for my 20s. I had a great time. The East Village was a very strong community at the time, and I met really cool people. Had an amazing neighbor, Johnny Roja, this fabulous British photographer raised in Africa, and all these famous friends of his. And it was very cool. Like, I really enjoyed that. I met my longtime partner there. We lived together for quite some time, and then I moved to Miami for a couple of years. Did like a second tour of Miami. Then we moved back together to Dumbo for 3 years. Had kind of a lovely, charmed time there. It was as we were really growing our business, and so we were able to afford a really nice place that doubled as our office. A lot of people thought we were crazy. We're like, "Ha, we don't have an office though. We don't spend, $3,000 a month on WeWork, so we get to have a really cool apartment. And we have big dinner parties and stuff." It was very cool. That we had through the pandemic, and then we bought this house, and then kind of went our separate ways romantically, continued to stay business partners. And so that's when I took my place in Mexico City and began two-way time splitting. And then earlier this year, I said, I got to be back in New York. And then I became a three-way time
Oh
splitter.
my gosh, you just unpacked a whole lot, and I love that. I love hearing again the kind of various areas you have been in, and again, your business venture in a sense, which we're going to dive into that as we move ahead. Kind of just staying on the New York aspect. So, New York enough. Like, what is it that you like or dislike about New York City? Like,
Oh gosh. So what I like, and I mean, it's, I love New York, and I'm looking at your logo right now, and I see I love New York. I love just not just the diversity of the city, and obviously, I mean the diversity of people. I mean, you just don't find that anywhere in the world. And I go to lots of cities, and they all, there's always an element of diversity, but I think New York always, in my mind, takes the cake. I'll challenge anybody to that. The diversity of people is amazing. The diversity of scenery and things you can do is also just amazing. And I'm the kind of person that I would say I'm very fluid. I don't identify with one particular scene or only one community. I like to kind of move around. For me, a day is not fully complete if I don't do something extremely fancy in old New York, and then also maybe slum it a little bit at like my favorite dive bar in the Lower East Side. So that's the way I like to do things, and New York affords you that possibility. You don't need to have one community in New York because you can have many, and I think that's really cool. It's very unique for a big city.
Absolutely.
I love that. I love how straightforward and genuine the majority of people are. I've never felt like New York is a very harsh or mean place, and some kind of popular culture says that, but I don't agree. I mean, I have tons of knowing funny experiences with people on the street all the time, and in bars I can walk up and talk to anybody, and so I love that about the city. Things I don't like about the city, if I'm being candid,
Please.
I mean, It seems silly to complain about the cost of New York. It's as old as time. Everyone's been doing it. I mean, there's articles that I've read in the New York Times from the 1940s that were like, the city's going downhill. Everything's getting too expensive. So it's always been happening. So I don't think our time is particularly unique. But I think sometimes, you know, you're paying a high entry fee to get into New York, to live there, to have an apartment, whether you're renting or whether you own. And then, you know, having your cost of living be so high in addition is, it can feel like insult to injury, I think. And I think that kind of, I think it has a detrimental effect on creativity and on people. And I don't just mean like artists or musicians. I mean like any kind, like, you know, entrepreneurial creativity, opening cool businesses at street level, opening cool businesses that are in the online sphere or Web3 or whatever. I mean, New York can be very, it simultaneously like really opens the door for a lot of people, but then also sometimes can shut it as well. And I think there's really interesting ways to enforce policy that's both human but also very, very helpful for encouraging entrepreneurs, artists, creative people. And I'd like to see more of that. And I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see not just controlling rent, but having the rent controlled apartments be dirty and full of bugs, but actually recognizing that there's an economic importance to making the city at least somewhat, should I say, affordable to live in, like somewhat affordable, right? There's a lot of economic advantage to that. And I think that that's the case that needs to be made and pushed forward.
Everything you just said is 100% true. When you say like policies that will help, anything come to mind? I mean, I know aside from rent control, and if you ever thought of it more in depth.
I don't know of any policies that are being floated by politicians, but I personally just think incentivizing small to medium businesses, and that includes that would actually, in my mind, include artists and creatives who are treating their careers as businesses, which is something that in my own business we really encourage. I think incentives of all types to encourage people to settle in New York and to be able to live there would just do amazing things for the city. And I don't think anybody wants to see storefronts changing every 2 years. Or, you know, yeah, the city's supposed to be hard. It's supposed to have barriers. I get that. But when those barriers are almost like artificial, like you can have a successful business or a successful career and still be pushed out, I mean, something's wrong. So I think incentivizing the people who are most pushing to advance the culture of the city and to improve things for everybody else would go a very long way. And there's a lot of ways to do that through taxes, through policy, and I'm very fond of that. So I think that that kind of policy would be really interesting. If there's someone out there doing it, then tell me about them.
100%. And again, I think I was discussing this with someone, during the pandemic. We lost a lot of businesses that had been around for a long time, right? That kind of were the heart of New York. That offered those unique aspects of New York, some of them creative. And again, that's gone. Other businesses like kind of turn, just like you noted, quickly within 2 years. There's just not much opportunity to kind of come back.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of businesses did some really cool things during the pandemic that I think have stuck. I've seen this, you know, nationwide and worldwide, where like certain businesses that adapted very well are actually doing much, much, much better than they were before the pandemic, and which I think is amazing. And some of the outdoor dining, with its own challenges, but some of the outdoor dining we now have in New York has allowed restaurants that had an almost impossible business model where they had 30 seats to double their seating and now actually become profitable. So there are some things that I think were good, but I mean, like where businesses responded well, but there's also a lot of businesses that just didn't have that kind of opportunity, and they were, and, you know, I think the pandemic was just the nail in the coffin. I think that they were already on death's door for years. So I don't like that, and that does sort of, like, as much as I'll always love the city and always feel so connected to it, you know, the city is made up of what we experience at ground level, like the theaters, the restaurants, the everything. And no matter how high you build or how many, you know, $4 million condos there are overlooking Central Park, or maybe I'm underselling, maybe 12 million, you know, it really comes down to what you can actually enter in at the street level. And if those things are disappearing or changing, you lose the character of a city. And eventually it's not just character, but you'll start to lose the incentive to live there. And that's a challenge that the city, I think, really needs to face for many reasons.
Well said. Well said.
Thank you for
sharing that. Any other specifics, I know, aside from that, that you dislike from the city? That's a big one. That's the biggest, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I don't find the garbage charming. I know they just, what did they just rate the garbage? They said that it was, not as smelly as they thought it was, or it was only 2% filthy. I think that, you know, New York can retain its character. It can be the coolest city, the edgy city, the awesome city, but it can also do the basic things that many other cities around the world are doing, like better waste control. That would be, I don't know why we have garbage bags piled on the street. You don't see that anywhere else. So that would be good to fix, I think.
It would reduce, you know, the roach problem, the mouse problem, the rat problem, and so forth. So it's all interconnected. I love that. 100%. Okay. In your opinion, this is a debatable question all the time. Like, who do you think can call themselves a New Yorker?
That's, you know, I mean, I actually asked someone this the other day. I was like, I'm like, how long have you been here? They're like, 3 years. I'm like, oh, so you're at that phase where like, you feel like a New Yorker, but people are still telling you that you're not. I think it's, you know, I'm not a purist on this. I mean, granted, I'm not originally from New York, but, I think it's just when you really feel it, when you really feel like a New Yorker. I'll adjust my answer. I will say, if you think of it as home, if you don't, you know, leave at every holiday, you know, some holidays, yeah, you want to go see family, whatever. But if you don't leave every holiday, and if you spend some holidays in the city, and you know what it feels like to be in New York City on Christmas or Hanukkah or the 4th of July, which is actually one of my favorite days because it's almost completely empty, which I love. Mm-hmm. And if, like, you know, for example, the pandemic, I mean, I don't begrudge people if you're close with your family and you went home and you spent time with mom and dad, like, it's awesome. Not a problem, but many of us did stay. And like, that to me was a real, feeling of being at home. Like I was like, didn't even think about not being there.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's, on one hand, it's whenever you really feel like a New Yorker. On the other hand, it's like when you truly choose to live in the city and not like escape it. And escaping feels good. I'm escaping it right now. But but I think that, you know, having your chops and having really stuck through some of the tougher times, it gives you a lot of credibility as a New Yorker.
Okay. Agreed. I like how you put it into that perspective. And when did you feel like a New Yorker, would you say? Was it early on? Was it?
Yeah, for me, I would say it was pretty early on. I mean, I kind of dove in head first. I got a job managing a restaurant, and I'd been in the restaurant industry. And this is like a funny side story, but I'd owned my first restaurant when I was 15 years old until I was 19.
Wow. Yeah, you owned a restaurant when you were 15?
I owned a restaurant in high school. Yeah. I barely went to school and worked every day in the restaurant. And
in Florida or New York?
In Florida. And, okay. I sold it when I was 19. And so I had a lot of very early experience in the industry. So I moved to New York, immediately began managing a restaurant, immediately just kind of had to dive in, you know, to the culture of the city quickly. Uh-huh. While doing that. And then after, you know, not even a year, like maybe 9 months, I decided to open up my own restaurant. I quit that job and I opened my own restaurant. And that, you know, I really, really dove in like headfirst, everything in the city, like everything from, you know, my construction team to food writers. And I was in the New York Times when I was 24. So I, Yeah, I consider myself a New Yorker pretty quickly. I like being part of the fabric of places that I'm in. I don't like being an observer. I like being a participant. So I don't know exactly the day or the time, but it was pretty
early.
Yeah.
I mean, you built a business from the ground up. Literally, construction in New York City. I think officiate you as a New Yorker. But let's peel back a little bit. The 15 and 19, was that family owned? Did you?
No, it was mine. It was mine and I with my brother-in-law and sister. We were partners in it. But I was not like a kid working for the family. I was the owner. So amazing. It's a very unusual, interesting, and formative part of my life.
Yeah.
But
Well,
Not, it
kudos to
wasn't unusual
you.
for me. It was just what I did. So,
Okay, so now we know you've been in and out of New York, but you literally built your foundation in New York with a business in the hospitality industry, and you've evolved from there ever since. You kind of, again, still have that background, but we're going to dive into the super fine art fair in our next segment. Just to kind of round up this segment, what advice would you give to someone that's looking to make the move to New York City?
Ooh, okay. I probably have a few things to say. Number one, don't be scared to bicycle. Bicycling is amazing. I'm gonna take so much flack for this comment, but the subway is overrated. It's not, I mean, I'm also like to my point about the garbage and stuff. I love New York. I'm not particularly charmed by things that are gross. And a subway gets it gets you to a lot of neighborhoods, but honestly, like just sometimes being down there, smell of urine and stuff, it's not lovely or anything. There are very few days that you cannot bicycle in New York City. I mean, I would, you know, I would bicycle 365 days a year. I've done it in snowstorms, whatever. But you know, the average person, I get it. There's days you don't want to go, but there's maybe only 60, you know, 50 or 60 days you really don't want to bike because it's freezing cold or whatever. It's a great way to get around, and you just have to get over that fear. The traffic moves fairly slowly in Manhattan compared to like your hometown or wherever. I feel much safer and more in control biking around Manhattan, and you see everything. You're at ground level. You get to know neighborhoods better. I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of biking in New York. That's one of my favorite things. So, number
Love
one, don't be afraid to bike. You know,
it.
don't be scared. Number two, I would say, choose your neighborhood wisely, and lean into it. Don't. Yeah, a lot of people do the hopping thing in New York. It's like a month here, 6 months there. They get a roommate, roommate leaves, whatever. Try to be a little bit more intentional with where you go and think of it as it's very easy to get lost in a city that big. And I know I said, you know, I have multiple communities and I really enjoy that, but like, you know, having a neighborhood and you know, a community where you know the shopkeepers and you can wave hi to somebody and talk to somebody every day. It goes a really long way. So be intentional. Think about like what you like. Do you like nightlife? Do you like, you know, quaint little shops? Do you like views of the river and in the city? I mean, like, what kind of person are you? And do you like parks? I mean, there are great neighborhoods for everybody in New York. And I'll give another note on that. Money and cost is really important, right? But don't trade off a really good experience living in the city for saving like tons of money being really far away. Because that time you spend on the subway, and granted, like I love the biking too, but the time you spend if you're 45 minutes, an hour away from the things that you want to do, you don't get that time back. And it takes away from the time that you can actually be engaging and exploring. So if it costs you an extra, you know, few $100 to be in the neighborhood you want, and that may not be, you know, Upper East Side or Central Park. It may not be the Lower East Side. It might be Park Slope. It might be Astoria. That's totally fine. But whatever neighborhood it is you want to be in, just really evaluate like if there's a way you can make sense of it rather than just going for the cheapest option if it's, you know, very far away. So that's my other advice for people coming into New York.
Wow, I love the advice you just gave, particularly about being intentional with where you live, because where you live is going to matter and where you spend most of your time. And if, again, you're spending it, getting to where you want to go in the city, then you're not really fully living in it, and also building that community, like you noted. So that's
Yeah,
well.
absolutely. It goes hand in hand with the biking and walking thing. Like I don't love when someone's lived in New York for 5 or 7 years and they only know the train stops and it's like, and they miss everything in between them. And I know plenty of people like that. And I'm like, guys, come on, get out and walk. Like go get deeper into each area, like really understand the places. And so yeah, being intentional with where you live and then getting around on foot or bicycle is just, to me, it's just an amazing way to engage with that city and turn it into something that is digestible, tangible, and something you can really know. That's my opinion.
Wonderful, wonderful. And so one of the last quotes that I ask as we're finishing the segment is, if you were to create a quote about New York City that's your own, or maybe even kind of give one that already exists out in the universe, what would that sound like
Well,
or look
I
like?
always thought of New York. I mean, I lived there exclusively from when I was 23 to almost 28, and then again, from my late 20s to my early 30s, and now I'm kind of back for two or three right now in my mid 30s. I always think of the quote, "It takes a village to raise a child," right? And I would say, yeah, it takes a village to raise a child, but I mean, a city like New York, if you engage with it, it can really grow you up in a way that not every city and not every place in the world can. It's, I don't know if that's exactly a quote, but it's like, if it takes a village to raise a child, a city like gives you so much perspective. The New York City gives you so much perspective on the world and life that you just can't get anywhere else.
Absolutely. You grow so much here, and that's the, I
Yeah.
think you made your own wonderful quote there. So thank you, Al.
Ha, thank you.
Gossipnista here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I wanted to hop in here to ask that if you haven't yet, if you could please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen. This will help me reach more people and spread the word about New York City and those who love it. And if you want to stay up to date, be sure to follow at Gossipnista Podcast on Instagram. Now, back to the show. I want to dive into again what it is you're doing right now. You're a serial entrepreneur, you're a creator, a curator, art collector, you've done it all. You ran in hospitality. I want to hear more about your background and super fine art fair. So let's start there. What's your background and then how did it evolve into super fine art
Definitely.
fair?
I'm happy to talk about that. So I come from a restaurant background, which I mentioned in growing up in Florida. My family was in restaurants, and then I had my own restaurant when I was a teenager. And then, I went to school in Miami. When I was in Miami, it was kind of like I'm dating myself here. It was like the mid-2000s. So it was kind of the birth of Art Basel and the kind of the madness that we all know. And so there were a lot of like cool, edgy neighborhoods down there that I would explore and go to art galleries. And I never really thought of myself as an art person, but I just was around it a lot and enjoyed it, enjoyed the scene and the feeling and everything. And then I moved to New York. I dove right back into hospitality, managing a restaurant, opened up my own restaurant. And through that restaurant that I owned, which was a Colombian hot dog restaurant called Los Perros Locos on the Lower East Side.
Love it.
Yeah, it was really fun. And I got a lot of opportunity to kind of flex my creative muscles through that place by, producing pop-up events. So I took over an old diner one time on the Lower East Side, and I ran these really crazy dinner parties out of it. I did one that was Dominican themed, called Comedera Heavy with my Dominican friends. I did another one that was like LGBTQ plus. A big DJ came in and spun in this diner. It was very, I had a gypsy punk band. It was very cool.
Fun,
Yeah. So I got to do cool things like that. And I, was able to, as this young, hospitality entrepreneur kind of on the edge, I was able to do some really fun stuff. And one of the things that happened was I was invited to be the caterer and build a cafe inside of an art fair that took place in what is now Moynihan Station. Everyone went and took the pictures of, but it was actually like this gutted like building where the post office trucks used to park. And I had some friends who ran an art fair that was in New York, that is still in New York, Miami, and Switzerland. And they invited me to come in and do a Los Perros Locos pop-up inside of the art fair. But I did it, and it was very successful for us, very financially successful. We had a great time. And I would just walk around and like look at what was happening and watch, the interactions and the sales or lack of sales or whatever was going on. And I started to just think about it, like entrepreneurially, what could I do differently in this world? And then shortly after that, I two things happened. I started dating my ex, James, who I own Superfine with. James is a photographer, and he was, very young and up and coming at the time, and kind of navigating the pitfalls of his art career, or like, just the everything that an artist is trying to figure out. And also, I decided to close my restaurant. I've been open almost 2 years, and I just didn't see that as my path anymore. And I looked at it long and hard. I said, you know, I could be the hot dog king of New York or not. And I chose the or not. So I, you know, that happened. We were seeing each other, and I kind of went about a year, had it, like a creative event production company, leaned heavily into that. I continued kind of staying in hospitality via catering. I would do catering for off-Broadway theaters often. And I also kept my little space that my restaurant was in, and I turned it into an art gallery, and I kept the kitchen. So it was like a half kitchen, half art gallery. And that was, and I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the kind of getting my feet wet in it. And then we just both saw opportunity, and we saw also where there was a gap in the fine art world where artists were getting zero business education and being indoctrinated into this really silly system of like just waiting around, hoping to be discovered, you know, like not having, you know, almost being taught that they shouldn't have business sense. And it just didn't make any sense. And then on the other hand, you had people who had, you know, some disposable income who wanted to buy art, and they were being excluded from the art world and couldn't really get in and be accepted and were turned away for how they dressed or how they looked or their race or gender or anything. And that's a very real phenomenon in fine art on both sides. We came in and we're like, okay, how can we do this? We could open a gallery. We could, you know, we could continue doing pop-up events, which we did. We did some pop-up art shows, and they were fun. And we're like, okay, but really the best way to make an impact is to scale and to actually produce fairs. So that's how Superfine was born about 7.5 years ago. We were working out of a little WeWork in on West Broadway, and we built the brand, and we started it in Miami while we were still living in New York. We went down there for a couple of years, lived there, came back to New York frequently, launched our first New York Fair 2017, and we've done, God, we're on our fifth. We just finished our fifth New York Fair, and we now have shows in 7 cities around the country. We've produced up like close to 25 of these, and we're the leading art fair for artists in the U.S. So that's kind of how it started.
Wow, I just got goosebumps. Well,
Yeah. Thank you.
congratulations to that, Alex. That is amazing. You've always, had the entrepreneurial heart, and you saw an opportunity within art, and you and James kind of optimize on it, and here we are today. Like you said, the number one art fair art in the world, in the US.
Number one art fair for artists. So where artists directly engage and sell to collectors.
Okay, so can you give us, what individuals can expect at Super Fine Art Fair, whether it's from, an artist's perspective and then also just an attendee perspective?
Absolutely. So artists are our bread and butter. It's our lifeblood of Superfine. And so if you're an artist, you can expect to engage with your collectors directly. Something like 95% of our artists meet new collectors at Superfine. And we really encourage artists to treat everybody who buys their art at any level as a serious capital C collector, and not to judge people by the budget that they have on any given day. Because when a person brings an artist's work into their home, whether it's a print, whether it's a $10,000 original oil, it doesn't really matter. It's just bringing art into their home, and then you become an artist. That they become their artist, and then they grow with you, and you grow with them. So you'll meet collectors. That's one thing I'm almost guaranteed. If you know you have quality work and a good attitude, you're going to meet collectors. You're going to enjoy the community. That's a big, big thing. The artists at Superfine meet each other. They stay in touch. They plan which Superfine fairs they're going to do together. They often plan exhibitions and curate them together. That it's a very, very entrepreneurial group, and who also create amazing work. And I think that that's really cool, because I think that's been very much missing from the art world. And I've heard that time and time again from artists we work with, is that, like, they love this community of artists who actually want to get out there and take what they want and grow their careers without relying necessarily on other people. And so, like, for visitors to the show, I think the real difference between Superfine and other art fairs you might have been to or other art exhibitions is, for one, okay, you're meeting the artist face to face. You're not talking to somebody about the artist's MFA or, you know, what the artist meant. You're asking the artist, and they're telling you what they meant, why they did this, how they made it. And I think that's really cool. I mean, I know that's really cool, because 75% of our visitors, when we survey them, asking them their favorite thing about coming to Superfine, that's what they say. So really meeting and connecting with these artists one-on-one, whether you are an artist yourself, whether you're you know, creative, whether you're not creative at all, you don't think of yourself as creative. I mean, it's a way of meeting and connecting with real, honest creativity. So that's a huge thing that you'll find differently at Superfine than in a lot of other venues where you might have art for sale. Mm-hmm. The other thing you'll find is that it's a comfortable environment. We're very careful about that. We don't use a lot of overhead lighting. All the booths are spotlit. We always have music playing. It's not a mausoleum. We have, I love the David Bowie radio. Sometimes we get a little bit of hip hop. It just depends. But it's not a full scale party. You're there for the art. It's not like, we're blaring, techno music at full volume and there's good backdrop music and, good lighting and, people are having a good time there. And that's something that you'll see. I know it sounds weird, like, oh, of course we're supposed to have a good time, but go to a lot of big art shows and it's like people are there to see and be seen, but they're not having a good time and they're not engaging with the work. And I actually, I really believe that part of engaging with art is buying it, taking it home and putting it on your own wall. And if you can't do that, you're kind of limited in how much you're engaging. It's like going shopping and not buying anything. I mean, it's just like, okay, it's cool to see the stuff, but I want to wear it. Yeah. So it's like that with art, I think. That's probably a very debatable opinion. Of course, I love all the great masters and museums. I'm a member of dozens of museums, but there's something about actually taking art home that really... Yeah, really, really it's engaging. So I think that's what you'll find different. You come to the show, I challenge you to not walk out the door with something. You'll buy something. That's, I'd say, the main difference for Superfine.
Yes, I'm actually, everything you just noted, Alex, I'm really excited to get to Superfine Art Fair. And that's something that you noted, right? Talk to me about the type of artists that you have. Are we talking only painters, sculptures? Like, define the people that can come to Superfine Art and sell their artwork. And then it works in a fair environment where you kind of set up a booth and then... I'm going into a lot of aspects here. So start with the first part.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're medium agnostic. It's not we're not a photo show or anything. I mean, we take artists of all different disciplines and all different media. I will say it's a lot of painting, quite a few photographers. Mm-hmm. We always have sculpture. We've, as collectors, been very keen on ceramics and sculptural works for a while now. So love having really cool sculptors in the show. Mm-hmm. And a lot of mixed media as well. So, really in terms of discipline and medium, you're going to find something that you like. The artists, we're very democratic. And that has kind of naturally informed the makeup of the Superfine community. So we have a lot of LGBTQ artists. James and I are both LGBTQ community members ourselves. Yes. So we get a lot of queer artists, which is very cool. We really try to facilitate that as much as possible. About 60 to 70% of our exhibitors are female, which is also a neat statistic because in the art world, up until even a couple of years ago, it was something like in major galleries, it was only 30 to 40% women. Which was kind of crazy at the time. And some of the major, major galleries were, 70 to 80% male artists. So that's shifting a lot, but we always kind of predated that with Superfine and just by being a more democratic option, have just had more artists who weren't getting the same opportunities. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's very cool about Superfine. In terms of the actual work and why, we consider it accessible, we encourage every artist in the fair to feature works that are under $500. And then, a big chunk of the work is under 500. And there's also work from 500 to 5,000. And we have an absolute cap at 10,000. So if you want that, masterpiece to hang over your couch and you're willing to spend $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, it's there. But we also have plenty of work that is, 100 to 500 prints. Artists often have some very cool curated merchandise. It's not a trunk show. We don't have like tons of t-shirts and things, but artists will do things like enamel pins. They'll do maybe a cool limited run, like garment or something. So there are neat things you can get at every price point. So it's, mm-hmm. that's why I said, I really challenge anybody to walk in and not buy something. If you're not Absolutely. Buying something, there's so much. So.
Oh my gosh. I love that you kind of just shared that as to what specifically you have the flexibility on, right? Capturing something from under 500, something over, whatever is going to meet your needs. You're going to find something there. And also just how you've opened the doors of visibility to a lot of artists. Do you know like kind of your metrics? Is there a lot of New York artists or New York or artists coming from all over the world, all over the US?
Yeah. So for the New York Fair, which is actually our largest show, we just had 120 artists in the New York Fair in September.
Wow.
The New York show is about, I'd say about 50 to 60% artists from either New York City or within about 100 miles of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of the rest of the artists come from around the United States. We do get some international, but I'd say we're more of a national fair. Just because the costs and of really coming in from far, far away become much higher. So, you know, we will get international artists, but, we get a good contingent from Japan actually.
Wow.
But yeah, I'd say New York makes up 50, 60% and then the remainder mostly from the US.
Wonderful. Amazing. And so I know you noted you have, is it seven fairs around the US?
Yes, currently seven. We're growing by about two a year.
That's amazing though. And you just kind of ended the last fair for this year in Los Angeles in October.
Yep,
and so I know your next one is coming up in Miami. So just give individuals more information where they can learn about you and what they can expect in the, you know, next year's fairs.
Yeah, absolutely. So the best place to get information about us is either our website or Instagram. Website is www.superfine.world. And at the bottom, there's a little widget where you can sign up for our newsletter. Also on Instagram, we're at Superfine Art Fair. Both of those are great places to stay in contact with us. We have a lot coming up in 2023 and 2024. We have Miami, like you mentioned, in February. We have San Francisco in March. We have Savannah, our first fair in Savannah, and really our first fair in the Deep South. And then we have Seattle, Washington, D.C., and then back to New York in the fall and back to Los Angeles again in October.
Mm-hmm.
We're adding new cities in 2024, so stay tuned. And just, yeah, every city is very, very cool. All the fairs are unique, really cool venues. We always choose amazing spaces. So
you have a lot of art fairs coming up. I love that. And you let us know where to connect with you if you know any artists are listening. You know, check it out, reach out to Superfine Art. And, you know, I don't want to leave you, Alex, without one asking if we covered anything, if there's anything I'm missing along Superfine Art Fair that you'd like to know. I'll start there.
No, I mean, I definitely think, well, you know, art, if you're an artist out there, visit www.superfine.world, click sell your art. There's a lot of information about the fairs and you can schedule a call with my co-founder, James Milley, to talk more about the options, different cities. Don't be scared. I mean, there's no commitment, but it's a very cool opportunity. And I think it's worth it hearing it out if you're an artist and you want to build a career, which I hope you do if you're an artist. So yeah, that, and then, to visit the show, it, you know, it's annually, but, that comes up very quickly. So I would say if you are interested in checking out the New York Fair in September, or if you're possibly in any of these other six cities around the US, yeah, again, visit www.superfine.world and you can click visit. And there's a lot of information about the upcoming shows on there. Other than that, I hope to see you at the show. And I'm really grateful to you, Mariana, for giving me the time to talk about myself in New York and Superfine for this amount of time with you.
Absolutely. I mean, I've enjoyed every second. You've given great perspective on every area within New York City, art, hospitality. I mean, again, just what you and James are doing for visibility in the art world, you know, the doors you're opening, the community and so forth that you're creating. Love it. Now we're going to move into our third segment here, Alex, where I'm going to ask a speed round of questions. But before leaving you, you know, I do want to know on you having a home in Shelter Island, which is something that, you know, I don't think a lot of people that are not from New York may know about it. And then, I don't know, maybe like, would you say not all New Yorkers are aware of Shelter Island? I mean, can you give us little background on it? And then I know you have a home you own there that it's like a manor, if I'm correct.
Well, we call it a manor. It's a house. It's a mid-century split level house. We call it Moonlit Manor. I guess it's a manor if we say it is. So yeah.
It's beautiful.
I'm very into mid-century, but sort of like merging mid-century style with all different, you know, a little Hollywood Regency, a little bit of out east, you know, kind of. So I love merging styles. So it's very cool having this slate of a mid-century house to work with. So Shelter Island, it's actually an amazing community. It's one of the One of the oldest communities in Eastern Long Island, it's Stone Island. We have a ferry system. We don't have any bridges here. So you drive your car onto a ferry, either from Sag Harbor or Greenport to come out here. It's lovely, bucolic, beautiful, just like premium scenery. I really love it. I love it more than I ever thought I would, because it is, it is a small town, but there is so much to do and see, and really just a gorgeous, gorgeous place with, water on all sides. So in my opinion, you can't beat that. And you can easily get out here by either the LIRR, or you can take the jitney to either Greenport on the North Fork or to Southampton or East Hampton, and then you can come in that way. Yeah, that's Shelter Island in a nutshell.
Literally, and I think I've looked into booking in Shelter Island before, and especially during peak seasons, it's a very small amount of, I think, Airbnbs or just bed and breakfasts that are there or hotels. So you have to book way in advance. And it's not that easy to obtain, I think, a lodging in Shelter Island. Would I be accurate to say that, or would you have more context on that, Alex?
Yeah, there's not a ton of lodging options, but a couple of places recently reopened. The Chiquit, which is a famous old hotel, it was just renovated. Also, the Prydwen, which is another big old hotel, was renovated and reopened. So there are a few. I'd say there's a good four or five hotels and another handful of bed and breakfasts out here. If anyone out there listening is looking for a longer stay during the summer or an off-season stay, we do rent our place. It's on Instagram. It's Moonlit Manor underscore SI. So just check that out. There's some really cool pictures, and I put some videos and stories up here and there about the house. So it's a very neat little property. So definitely check it out. Yeah, it's an island, so there's not, and I definitely peak season is hard out here. We do a 2 week minimum in peak season, prefer month plus rentals. So it is hard if you want to come out for a weekend in June, July, or August. But I will say, I usually, we rent the place in July and August, and that's fine with me because September is beautiful out here. October is beautiful. And so are April and May. So like, and so honestly, January is nice. I go sledding. So, don't be afraid to, it's another kind of word of advice for incoming New Yorkers. Don't get too wrapped up in like, oh, I need to be in the Hamptons in July or whatever. Like, just go places, try them different times of year. It's such a, New York is a vast, vast state. You have the Finger Lakes wine country. You have the North Fork and all the cool farm stands. You have Shelter Island, the Hamptons, Montauk, and tons of stuff upstate, the Hudson Valley. I mean, and you have four seasons. So just get out and explore. Don't get too locked into, city life and never leaving. Like, explore as much as you can.
Beautifully, beautifully said. Thank you, Alex. Again, thank you again for sharing your New York story, more about your work with Super Fine Art Fair, and then again, a little bit about Shelter Island and Moonlit Manor. So, diving into our last segment, it's a speed round of New York related questions that I'd love for you to play. And are you down to play that?
Oh, absolutely, I am.
Wonderful. All right. So I'm just going to sound off and you just say the first thing that comes to mind. You can elaborate, of course, but the quicker, the better. Here we go. Uptown or downtown?
Downtown.
East or West Side?
Ooh, east.
Subway, bus, or bike or walking?
Haha, you know it, bike.
Bike. Yes. As you were talking earlier, I'm like, I know this one. All right. Favorite New York neighborhood?
Oh, God. This one is too hard.
You just pick two,
Okay,
three. Just
I'm gonna say Brooklyn Heights.
love it. Okay. Favorite New York borough.
Oddly, Manhattan.
Okay. I love
Hey,
that.
yeah.
And then favorite New York food, specific type of food that's, just a New York thing.
This should be easy for me. I love New York. Oh, you know what? Katz's pastrami sandwich.
Ooh, very much a staple of the city. Yes. Any specific favorite restaurants aside from, loving cats?
It's Cafe Mogador in the East Village, the Moroccan restaurant. I have a lot of fond memories there. A lot of first dates.
I love it. Okay, I feel like I've heard that one before. Okay, definitely gonna check that out. Favorite season in New York?
Fall, and I would actually say winter is just behind fall.
Okay. Favorite New York tourist destination?
I mean, I like the theater district, and Times Square is obviously like crazy, but when you're in the theater district, you're going because you're going to see Broadway, and Broadway is amazing. So I gotta probably say like the theaters and theater district.
Beautiful. Favorite non-tourist destination? So maybe like a little spot that you go to that you love that's more off the beaten path.
Cobble Hill Park. on Clinton Street in Cobble Hill is my number one.
Oh, love that. Okay. Favorite holiday in New York City?
I love Christmas in New York City, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's magical. Mm-hmm. Favorite New York movie or TV show? One or the other, or both, if you have.
Movie is something tied between Annie Hall and the Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan version of You've Got Mail.
TV show?
Ooh, TV show in New York. God, I feel like I'd be very cheesy to say Friends.
That's a classic.
Yeah, that's what I grew up with. So let's just go with
Friends. Yeah. Okay. Favorite New York park?
I mentioned Cobble Hill Park. It's very charming. It's a very small park. I love Prospect Park. I obviously love Central Park, but I'm going to give it to Prospect Park because it's different. It's more of a family park. People aren't there to see and be seen. They're there to enjoy nature. And it's the same designer as Central Park. It's just a different experience. So I'll say Prospect Park.
Love it. Okay. And scale one. Wait, this question threw me off. On a scale of 1 through 10, how good of a driver are you?
Oh, I'm an excellent driver. I drive in New York City all the time. No issue.
Do you? Oh, I love that. Okay. So you drive from Shelter Island, you have a car, goes on the ferry, and then you drive over to the...
I've got two classic cars. I've got a 75 and a 79, and I drive them all over the city.
Oh my gosh, beautiful. I love that you're keeping up with, like, you know, that old feel, mid-century.
So oh yeah.
That's a little more, you know. Yeah.
Post-mid-century.
All right. One word to describe New York City?
Quintessential.
Favorite weekend getaway from New York?
Shelter Island.
Number one tip on how to live your best life in New York City.
Really dig in. It's going to be a contradictory tip. Mm-hmm. Dig in. Dig into your neighborhood. Dig into the restaurants. Let go of, you know, I don't know if people still use Yelp, but let go of Yelp. Let go of reviews. Let go of what everybody says is the best place or where the... Sometimes the lines mean something really good when it's, you know, the high holidays and there's a line at Katz's or at... Jonas Schimmel Russ and Daughters. That's a good thing, and it means that you should be going there and getting something. But sometimes the lines are silly, and they just mean something looked really good on Instagram. So dig in and, like, find your own favorites. Like, find your special places. Find the places where you have your first dates, where you really, you know, like have these amazing connections with people, and sometimes the people working there are the owners. So really dig in and like... learn to love your neighborhood and the other neighborhoods around it as well. And then my contradictory advice is get out of town sometimes. You know, don't get in the, like, don't let the anxiety of the city kind of build up. Like realize that you can get out and you can go somewhere. And there's so many cool places within 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours of New York City. So, you know, get out and explore, see other places, other cities, towns, and just beautiful, beautiful landscapes that you can get to really easily. So both dig in and then also get out sometimes.
I love it. I think it was said, like, a true New Yorker that really knows the city. And you have given some incredible tips and advice throughout this conversation. Alex, it's been so amazing, again, hearing your story, hearing your perspective. Thank you so, so much for your time today. Looking forward to attending Superfine Art. And everyone, be sure to, you know, connect with Alex on his website and Instagram for that. Any final words before we part, Alex?
No, I was really excited to be here, Mariana. I hope that I've inspired some people who are thinking of moving to New York City or currently live there to get out and really enjoy the city to the fullest.
100%. You've inspired me. And that's yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to Gossipista. Your support means the world. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please be sure to hit the subscribe button and share this podcast with your friends. Can't wait till next week's episode. Follow along on Instagram @Gossipista to get my latest New York happenings. But if you live and breathe New York City like I do and want even more, go to our website @gossipista.com, explore, and subscribe to our newsletter to get insider tips first. Lastly, if you have any questions and or scoop on the city, you can email me @gossipista@gmail.com. Until next time, you know you love me. XOXO, Gossipista.